I want to welcome Brandon Hollingsworth and Austin Boyd, our old friend who's been in the you came in like you'd been here before. It's anyway, it's Austin joins us. We've talked about prototyping. We've talked about, because you've got the thing over at Energy. That's your day job.
Right.
We've talked about some of the other things you've done with Choose Life and some of the other stuff. And now on top of everything else, you guys have so much spare time. You've written a couple of books, but this is your first. Define for me speculative fiction. What is that exactly?
Well, I'll grab it, and then Brandon ought to put an exclamation point on it. Some people will call things like fantasy speculative fiction. Within the Christian fiction world, Fred, speculative is anything that's not just a tried and true story of someone's typical faith walk. So if you went to, say, Barnes & Noble and looked in the inspirational fiction section, you'd find a lot of Amish fiction type mm-hmm. stories. Inspirational fiction, though, is where you get a little edgy. In this case, we tell a story about a girl who touches water or drinks water, and she has these visions, and she says, I'm tired of having these crazy things pop in my head, so I'm not going to bathe or drink water anymore. And the question is, how long could you go without taking a bath? That's a little edgy, and that makes it speculative in the industry's sense.
Yeah, the speculative label kind of lets you know that there's something not quite usual going on in this box. In this book. So something that's a little odd, a little unusual that wouldn't happen to just anybody in the normal day life. That's what makes it special. Yeah,
that's kind of the opposite of how to win friends and influence people, because people probably want to be around you after you got smelling a little gay.
Right. And that's one of the points for the book, too, is Kate Pepper, the lead character. She's very successful. She, you know, she's got a lot of success, a lot of money, a lot of high-powered friends. And then what happens to her world is she decides to stop interacting with water.
This is the first time. The other reason I'm a little intrigued here is typically you write a book and it's one person and you might have a collaborator maybe from the art standpoint. But right. You guys both kind of put this story to. How does that work?
Well, we got the original idea, and I pitched it to Austin. And he thought it was a killer idea, and so we set out on a trip to write the book. And basically, we sat down and we outlined the whole novel. We went up actually to Joe Wheeler State Park and had a weekend where we just prayed over this book, and we did all of our research, and we outlined the entire book to a scene level. We detailed the characters massively. I mean, we knew everything about these characters, their personalities, their love languages. I think I know more about Kate Pepper than I do my own wife sometimes. But we got to know these characters really well. And then once we had that scene level outline, we just some scenes resonated with me, some resonated with Austin. And so, obviously, we chose those, and then we divided up the rest of the book.
So there's literally you in a chapter, Austin in a chapter kind of stuff? Or various paths that she takes?
Yeah, or even subsections of a chapter. And so then it was just an issue of syncing our kind of authoritative voices, our voices for the character.
So how common is this?
It's not common. There are occasions when you see guys that do collaborations, and I know a lot of authors, and many of them share that collaborations often don't work. Collaborations usually result in one of two things. Either the book reads like it's black, then it's white, then it's black, then it's white, or because they don't have a common voice, or the friendship breaks down. And we've been blessed that the friendship's going strong, and the book has a single voice all the way through, but it's because we work for where we each had complementary capabilities, like a marriage.
But you also have a character who takes an odd journey, yeah, so it, right. I guess it's easier to kind of weave that in that you can have all these offshoots of incidents, and they all kind of all pull back together.
That's right. Well, and her being a female, too, we first person in perspective female, that was a challenge.
And yeah, two dudes writing about a woman and her life in H2O, the novel. So water is the key here. I don't want to be around water anymore. Kind of hard to avoid that, too. Yeah. Austin Boyd, Brandon Hollingsworth, they're in for the hour. We'll talk a little bit. I want to talk a little bit. I want to touch on this Tebow thing, because I want to get your opinion on this that just came out about if Tebow was a Muslim, how we'd be looking at this. Because I just, for whatever reason, I can't get that one out of my head. More with our guests. Be careful out there. Might see some slick spots still. But we got the sun coming. That'll help. You know, just when I say we've dodged the bullet, I still want to mention that earlier this morning they were talking about patchy black ice, freezing fog, a possibility this morning. Still might be the case, so you want to be particularly careful going over, you know, the hills and valleys and all of that stuff, higher elevations, bridges and overpasses. That's usually the area susceptible to black this freezing fog, which is an interesting phenomenon. And a couple times a year, it'll happen on the I-65 bridge going across the Tennessee River, so just be extra careful. Right now, 30 Huntsville and 27 Decatur. Brandon Hollingsworth and Austin Boyd have co-written it's speculative fiction. And you explain that that's, the things that you know,
little
might
edgy.
Happen.
Yep.
A little edgy. So the whole, this character, again, her name is?
Kate Pepper.
And you guys have become Kate in this. You've had to.
We did.
You've had to channel Kate.
It's a strange place to be.
And you're both guys.
Yes, that was quite an experience.
Now, the women in your life, has your opinion changed of them or them of you?
I'll let you go first.
All right. Has it made you more sensitive? Has it made you
more sensitive? Absolutely. The first thing I'll tell you is that my daughter Alice says I need to take a T test. That's a testosterone test. She says anybody who can write first person woman needs to be suspect as a man. But I love you dearly, Alice, and I know you're asleep still. But it's funny. We said, let's go do this first person, first of all, because it makes it even more edgy. Mm-hmm. Second, being two guys writing a female point of view will be interesting, perhaps, to some readers.
Well, and a challenge as writers.
It's a challenge, yeah. It was meant to stretch us, because right. You can write first-person guy, and okay, but let's go try to learn how to write first-person female. Right. And when you do that, it forces you to pay attention to every single word and every single thought.
So things you would... So if you were writing as a guy... Some things you would think, well, everybody knows this, but as you're writing as a woman, you've got to make sure you don't miss any detail because you don't know what you don't know, kind of. Right. We're in the other, well, everybody would assume that if you're right. Writing the other way. So if a woman had written this story, it might have come out totally different.
And there were even little nuances that we would write something about maybe the way Kate would walk or reaction she would have, and we were blessed to have a team of 30 pre-readers that were women from all walks of life and all ages, and they would call us on that. They would say, you know, a woman would never act that way. She would never react in that manner. Yeah. And so we did. We really learned a lot, I think, about the female psyche. And my problem is I think I learned a lot, but I tend to forget it a lot, being a guy.
Yeah, so. That's right.
Now, Austin, you've written other things. Brandon, this your first
adventure? No, I've got another Mosaic novel out through a small imprint publisher that I actually wrote with five other guys.
Wow. So this is a collaborative thing. Is not a new thing, but...
I love to collaborate, so...
It is, you know, because I never thought of that. I mean, you have a lot of people who just, they have an idea, they put it on paper, they have a couple of people rip it apart, they put it together again, and boom, it's out there. This kind of, to me, I'm going, wow, how do you pull this off?
Think about it like a radio station. You're behind the mic, but Scotty's behind the glass.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't have this radio show without Scotty.
Right. Absolutely.
And Scotty wouldn't have the show without you.
See how big his head's getting now?
That's right. So the book is kind of the same way. There'd be some chapters where we'd realize that, man, Brandon, you can write these vision scenes because she's living a normal life. She touches water, and then, pow, she's off in this la-la land, which are all exact pulls from the Bible of water scenes, but they're written from the point of view of the water. So Brandon would write these water scenes where you're the water in the well when Jesus sees the woman at the well. You're the water in the Red Sea when it parts. What did the water see? And Brandon writes the scenes, and then I do the dialogue. So we did it that way, too, where we didn't only split up chapters, but we split up elements of chapters.
So you have this story, H2O, about this woman who has a normal life, a very successful life.
Right.
So what's the trigger that all of a sudden, because she's been around water all her life, probably, right. What's the trigger that all of a sudden she's not going to be around water anymore?
Well,
or is that part of the reason they need to read the book?
No, it is part of the reason and kind of the mystery element of the book and why you want to read it to figure out why this is happening to Kate. But she loves water. She moves to Seattle, and she loves to ride her motorcycle in the rain. She's a sushi chef. She loves to, which has a lot of water in the preparation. And she loves water, and basically something happens where water suddenly becomes intrusive into her life, and it is giving her these visions, and she doesn't understand why. These visions are sometimes beautiful, they're sometimes frightening, they're sometimes disturbing, and she doesn't understand why, and so she has to make this critical decision to either, you know, go crazy, basically, or stop touching water.
Leave the thing she loves.
Right.
So she can leave the thing she loves to keep her head.
Now, have you guys been to Seattle?
We have. I have.
Yes. So is that important to the process?
It's very important. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So do the research on the people, but do the research on the place.
Absolutely.
To the point that we even went to do sushi lunches to watch how the sushi chefs, say that 10 times fast, would prepare the food and how much water was involved and how they'd wipe the knife and where the rags were.
In Seattle or just somewhere?
We did that here.
Oh, here, okay. Because right. I'm thinking, there's good food in Seattle. You know?
You don't have to go to Seattle to get some good sushi. So.
That's true. But yeah, they could do some... There's a what is that place? Etta's up above the. I don't know if y'all ever eaten there. It's really good. Near the waterfront in Seattle. It's really, really good. Anyway, we have Brandon Hollingsworth and Austin Boyd. They have co-written this speculative fiction, H2O, about this woman who all of a sudden hates water. And kind of hard to have friends if you haven't. You know, unless you're like everybody else and you're marooned on an island and nobody bathes, but this is different. She's trying to still deal with everybody else.
Or you love baby wipes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, there's the other thing. Anyway, more with our guest, Austin Boyd and Brandon Hollingsworth. We'll talk a little bit more about the book and a little bit about them coming up in the next half hour. Stick around. It is the Fred Holland Morning Show. It's Thursday. We've got Brandon Hollingsworth and Austin Boyd, co-authors of a speculative fiction novel called H2O. And again, writing two guys writing from the perspective of a woman, something that is intriguing to me. By the way, 28 Huntsville, 27 Decatur. We're still looking for. Speaking of H2O, it's the culprit this morning because you got the black ice potential and perhaps the ice fog, so you still want to be aware of that. Two things we were talking during the break. Spare time. You guys have regular jobs. You got all these things going on. Entrepreneurs, we know about entrepreneurs. They've always got something going. It's just, you know, what's next? You know, you get to the next thing. And then you're writing a book. I mean, where do you, for people who want to, because everybody, I have one in my head, I'll bet you there are probably a dozen, Scotty probably has an idea in his head, everybody wants to write a book. What gets you, again, is it busy, productive people just find a way to be more busy and productive, or what makes it happen?
I'll let Austin answer first, and I'll add an exclamation.
Yeah, I think that, there's only 24 hours and only 60 minutes in an hour. So some things have to go. I joke that I sleep less, but that's really not the key. For me, I don't watch much television, and I get up early. So I find time to do it then. But it's not just how much time you carve out. You have to make the time productive. And Brandon mentioned earlier in the show that we spent a lot of time planning the book down to the point that we had an outline for every single scene. So we could get up in the morning or work at night and just pull that scene. Okay, I'm writing scene number 3 of chapter numbers 12. And I'm going to write that scene. And then, you know, in that hour that you have, you only have an hour, you can't build up the encouragement to go write. Instead, you have to sit down and say, I'm writing that scene. There can't be one of these, I'm fighting writer's block. And we never fought writer's block because we always knew the next thing we had to write.
Yeah.
The compelling thing of this, H2O, by the way, you guys are doing a book signing. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. Mm-hmm. The part that I think people are going to kind of cock their heads, it's two guys writing in the, not just writing as a female, but in the first person.
Right. Absolutely.
I'd never heard of that before. But Austin, one of you said this idea that if you're that person, or that if you're a guy, and you're writing as a guy, there are a lot of things you assume people would know. And I'm right. Thinking the same thing. If you're a woman writing as a woman, you're going to make some assumptions that maybe your reader doesn't. You guys, not knowing all of that, actually were able to pull this off because you didn't want to miss a detail, didn't want anybody to think you'd missed a detail. So that made it better that it's guys writing as a woman?
Yeah, I would argue that that's the case because we were forced really to examine every single word, every single expression, every single nuance of the main character. And like I said, we had 30 people, 30 women, at least at one point who were checking us on every one of those.
And especially our wives.
Yeah. And we chose the first person because the book deals with visions, we wanted to really compress that point of view, and we wanted the readers to see through Kate's eyes, because third person perspective, we felt that the visions wouldn't have as much impact. But when Kate goes through a vision in the book, you are there with her. I mean, you are seeing this through her eyes. And at some point, she physically becomes the water that is in the vision. It becomes her point of view. So it's a very unusual storytelling method, which really, I think, spoke to Austin and I as writers, and also spoke to the publisher. They really liked that aspect of the book, and that is one of the aspects that makes the book speculative as well.
Well, it kind of brings, if somebody's looking for something different and new and they want to be challenged, I think you're going, wow, I want to see if these guys can pull this off.
Absolutely.
I talked about how basically it changed your relationship. So what have you learned from this, doing it this way? Is it changed other things in your lives?
You've heard it said many times that folks who have problems sometimes are stuck in the me first mentality. You know, it's all about me. And one thing we've really learned is it's not about me and it's about us. And, you know, I joke sometimes it's like a marriage. You know, we're not married, but we had to collaborate on this book. The same thing goes for the writing. It's not all about me. You need to listen to what the other guy has to say. So it's forced us to listen a lot and to pay attention to what the other person had to say, because he might be right.
Yeah, I would agree. I really think that it's taught us that our friendship is very strong, and that we were able to go through this. And we didn't really have a bad go at it at all. I mean, I thought the collaboration aspect was phenomenal. But it really did teach us to depend on each other and to let go of some things. And it even continues to this day. I mean, Austin was saying earlier before we came on the show, we were talking, and he said, you know, the book, we wrote the book in a relatively short amount of time, but the marketing effort, which happens after the book is sold, has been monumental. And we share in those burdens and those duties as well. And it really helps knowing that you have somebody kind of in your corner pocket pulling for you.
How long have you guys known each other? I mean, how'd you meet? Is this something you've known each other all your lives, or is this a relatively new experience?
Austin used to work at SAIC, and I work at SAIC still. And we met there after he wrote his first book. And I did some web design work on the side and asked if he needed a webmaster for his website. And I became his webmaster. We got to know each other through that, became friends, and then we became accountability partners and then co-authors.
So it's kind of that process of trust. You're building trust all the way along the way here.
Absolutely.
What kind of reaction are you guys getting to this thing so far? What kind of feedback? So stuff you expected, or something that, wow, I didn't see that one coming?
It's more wow, but it's wow in the good way. Whenever you write a book, you put it out there in a guarded sort of way. It's like if you paint a picture and you hope that people like it and everybody's sort of nice to you. But we've actually found that people are going, super, wow, it set me on fire. It's sort of like I'm used to eating oatmeal, and all of a sudden I got huevos rancheros with a little bit of spice, and people are saying, this is so much fun. And it has taken us by surprise just how it's been embraced, and it's a fun book to read, and people are expressing that. We really appreciate it.
You know, we talked a little bit off the air. We were chatting during the break about one of the things that I've been really passionate about. And Brandon, you read a little bit about this Fox sports reporter who poses this interesting question. And I ask this because everybody's faith walk is different, but it's common in many ways. You look at what's happening with Tim Tebow right now, the Denver quarterback, former Florida Gator quarterback. And you ask this question, what if Tim Tebow were a Muslim? And you sit there and you go, wow. It's one of those things where it's kind of like writing a book. Somebody's going to see this book and they're going to go, wow, that's a great idea. Why didn't I think of that? Yeah. And it's the same thing with this Fox reporter.
Yeah.
Nobody has ever, you know, we bend over backwards to accommodate the minority in this country.
That's right.
To where political correctness has become insane. Mm-hmm. And I think she brings up an interesting point here. What if Tim Tebow was a Muslim? You know?
It's Well, I think that, I think that what if question is just so essential. We asked the question in the book, what if you couldn't take a bath? How long would you go? Mm-hmm. In this case, what if Tim Tebow were a Muslim? And then people will tend to shy away from very sensitive or very inflammatory topics, and their natural reaction is to do things and say, well, we can't talk about that. And so you have this protectionism that results, you know, for example, it's politically incorrect to talk about some things. Well, if Tim Tebow were a Muslim, would they be giving him as hard a time? Probably not, because it would be politically incorrect to do that. But it's never politically incorrect to bring attention to a Christian. And one of the things that we've been asked is, why did you go write Christian fiction? Why didn't you just write this book about somebody else? It's because we don't apologize for Jesus.
Right.
Brandon and I have dedicated the book to Christ because we felt like it's time to stop apologizing for Jesus. Tim Tebow does not apologize for Jesus, and we're happy to be writing what we are, and he's happy to be throwing the ball in Jesus' name.
So, well, you know, and this reporter makes an interesting observation. She says, I think this, you look at the world in which we live, you guys see it, but the world in which Tebow plays is a pretty decadent group of people. They're out, you know, drinking and drugging and doing all this stuff. He makes them uncomfortable.
Right, that's right.
And I think to some degree, you make people perhaps uncomfortable.
And hello, conviction does make people uncomfortable. That's what it's all about. You know, if you're not doing the right things and you're held up to a standard, that makes people uncomfortable. We don't want to be told that we're not doing things correctly. Nobody likes to hear that. But that's what the gospel is. The gospel says we are never, ever going to be good enough to be able to be in the presence of a holy God. And we have to have him to bridge that gap for us. And that's what people don't like. They don't want to hear that. And they don't like people who tell them that. And, you know, I think political correctness is in its entirety is a tool of the enemy.
Well, and it seems to be bringing us down.
Absolutely.
And then so hopefully things like this where you do profess your faith and you live your faith. And I think that's what makes people so uncomfortable about Tebow is he's living it.
Absolutely.
And then when they criticize him, he smiles.
Yep.
He just takes it. He takes it.
Good
know,
for
that's,
him.
That's the
that's
persecution
right.
part of it. You know?
Yeah, we're promised persecution.
I want to get to the book signing. We'll talk a little bit more about that and a little bit more about your journey as far as the promotion part. I'm intrigued by that because that's another project all by itself.
Yes,
right?
Sir.
Austin Boyd, Brandon Hollingsworth, the co-authors of H2O, Guys Writing as a Woman. This ought to intrigue you all by itself. 28 Huntsville, 27 Decatur. Might still be some slick spots. We're going to warm up to about 46 today, and hopefully whatever slick spots are out there, you know, don't let your guard up, though. It might be 9 o'clock this morning, and there might be a spot, and you just be careful this morning. When I first considered talking with these guys, I thought, wait a minute. Say what? Your guy's writing as a woman. H2O is actually Austin and Brandon, Austin Boyd, Brandon Hollingsworth. This is the first of a series of these, right?
It is the Eternal Elements series. So next one will come out next December titled O2 as in Oxygen. And it will also be, we think, a first-person book, which we're working on that. Right. We'll have to see how that works out.
It's another big challenge.
It's a very big challenge. And this next novel will be written from the perspective of a Down syndrome person.
Huh.
And we want to make sure people understand that some of the most gentle, loving folks on the planet are Down syndrome, and the book will be done from her perspective. So whether we can write it first-person or third-person, we're still working that one.
You guys, the other thing here is this interdependency where you've got somebody, the other thing about collaborating is you've got somebody else waiting for you to do right. your part. A bit of accountability there that you don't normally have as an author, I guess. You know, you see all these movies where people get writer's block, we mentioned that,
right.
or they're sitting there going, oh, I'm going to come up with the next chapter. You guys have mapped this out and you're waiting on each other to finish your part. More productive, does it make it more possible to do greater things, or is that still the chapter to be written, I suppose?
I think for me personally, it does. It definitely it pushes me to the next level as a writer. I've written ever since I was in the fifth grade. I've always wanted to be a full-time author, and I've written lots of stuff with lots of different people. And I always perform better when I know I've got someone who's depending and waiting on me to provide my element of the story, of the novel, of the design, whatever it happens to be. So absolutely for me, it drives me to do better and do more.
So this took how long to write?
Took us about 10 weeks. I typically do a novel in 10 to 12 weeks. We build a little graph, and this is how many words you got to do a day.
Which is insane, 10 weeks.
10 weeks. And it's taken much longer. I want to get, before we get, we'll talk about the book signing and the promotional part
right.
of this. But that's more than 10 weeks.
Oh, that's
and that's a whole other job,
that's
right?
That's the rest of your life.
Actually getting your book seen and read
right.
and all of that stuff.
That's a whole other thing.
Brandon Hollingsworth and Austin Boyd, the authors of H2O. It is a speculative novel, in the category of speculative fiction. And she doesn't take a bath. We know that. So eventually, hopefully, she does. More on this book and more just ahead. 7:53, still pretty cold, 29 Huntsville, 28 Decatur. What did Brandon say? This is the best stinking novel you'll ever read?
That's right.
Yeah, that's it.
Referring to the not bathing parts.
Yeah, H2O, it's interesting perspective here. Brandon Hollingsworth, Austin Boyd, co-authors, collaborators. There are going to be more of these. In this particular case, you guys learn how to be women.
Yes.
Well, let's don't go that far.
Well, you learn how to write from
a
woman's perspective.
Trying to get inside the head of a woman.
Which was a project all itself.
And for those ladies out there that are listening, we recognize it took two guys to make a gal. So
that's right.
Yeah, they're nice save. Okay, so this book took 10 weeks.
Yes, sir.
The promotional element of it, I mean, you go to a, is this one of those things where you go to a publisher? Or you, now, both of you had a little experience. Did y'all go to the same publisher you've worked with, or was this a different publisher? Or how does that part of this work? Because then the other part, the hard work now is you got this thing.
Right.
Now what do you do with it?
Well, we were blessed to sell this book to AMG Publishers, who's up in Chattanooga. And AMG picked it up, and of course, publishing is a shared risk between the author and the publisher. And you're making a mistake if you're thinking about writing a book and getting $1 million, because most of the time, most of the marketing goes back on the author, not on the market, not on the marketing department of the publisher. So we're very active in out promoting on the web, promoting in person, promoting in lots of different ways the book. And, of course, I have a big book signing coming up this Friday night from 7 to 9 in Jones Valley at Barnes & Noble. But we have to work that together, and if you don't do that for a long time, you can't just do it for a week and then quit. Marketing and sales of your book lasts as long as the book's in print, and that could be years, or it could just be months, depending upon whether you flame out or you continue to succeed.
That part of it, I think, I think you're right. I think people think, oh, I'll write a book, and then I'm going to make $1 million. But you've got to be, you got to get out there and work it.
You sure do.
You've got to have some skin in the game. You've definitely got to be proactive, especially in today's market. You've got to be out there and actively selling your book. But you really have to, it's more than just selling your book. It's really selling yourself as an author and as a quality person, I think, and the fact that you have a message and that you have something to say.
Is it easier with the internet, or is it harder? Because you have as much competition. There's more competition now, too, right?
Yeah, I would say it's a double-edged sword. The market is huge, and now with self-publishing gaining a lot of popularity and a lot of really legitimacy in the publishing industry, there's a huge flood of new novels out there, so you really have to try to create a platform around your novel, and you have to really try and stand apart from the crowd. And social media is definitely a tough thing to try and manage. You have to spend a certain number of hours a day just interacting with people. It's more than just tweeting, and it's more than just sending out links. You've really got to build these relationships with these people so that they care about you and not just what you're trying to sell.
You know, and that is in marketing in general, and what we do and what our clients do, our listeners and whatever businesses they have, we're all learning. We're trying to get our brains, our arms around this whole social media thing. And, I mean, I'll tell you, it's overwhelming.
It is. It's tough. I was talking to a author friend of mine the other day on we were actually tweeting back and forth on Twitter. And I said, how many hours a day do you spend just, you know, social media stuff? And he was like, well, you know, it varies, but it could be up to 4 hours a day just interacting with people.
Wow.
And that's a lot of productive time.
That's a lot of time.
It really is.
Particularly when you're already crunched.
Or when you have a full-time job and a full-time family and you're busy with your church.
That's right.
And you've got a business on the side and you're publishing a book. It's
Brandon's in a particular tough spot. His wife, Heather, homeschools her four children. Right. My four children.
In her spare time.
In her spare time.
Oh, yeah.
So he's still raising kids. Mine are grown up and have jobs, or they're off at college.
That's what we want. We want them to go off and get great jobs so they can take care of us down the road here. Yeah. I'm hoping. Okay, so what you expect out of this book, H2O, again, a story of a woman in the first person written by two guys. Again, I think the detail part of this is the part I think that's going to amaze people, that I think writing for that perspective, you got all these things that perhaps somebody thinking people would know. You didn't miss, so that helps. So from H2O, you're going to go to a whole series of these.
Yes, sir,
and
right.
So this one's important, getting the word out and getting, tell them again, Barnes & Noble.
Barnes & Noble in Jones Valley. Barnes & Noble, Jones Valley, this Friday night, the 9th of December from 7 to 9 o'clock. We've invited 44,000 people. Get there early.
And we're doing a fundraiser for the United Way.
That's right. Just raises money
all
for the
profits, and percentage of all profits goes to United Way.
All right, Austin Boyd, Brandon Hollingsworth, H2O's the book. Pick it up. I'm intrigued already.